welcome listeners to Connect the Dots on the Progressive Radio Network. I'm Allison Rose Levy, and delighted to be your host for today's show. That was The Garden by Bobby McFerrin from his new CD, Vocabularies. I'm a health journalist and a Huffington Post blogger, a best-selling writer, and longtime media professional covering health, the environment, and the connection between personal health, the environment, and social choices about health. We also link to activism, as well as increasing health literacy and health awareness. On today's show, I am delighted to have as a guest Mark Shouse, and we're actually going to be talking about something that I don't think you'll hear on a lot of other programs. Mark offers something very special, which is really the backbone of what I call advanced integrative health services. He runs a lab called Lab Interpretation LLC, and he offers lab testing services to integrative doctors and healthcare practitioners. So what we're going to be talking about on today's show is kind of a background look at some of the more advanced possibilities and solutions that some healthcare practitioners use, and maybe you can find ones that do. So this is going to be a step up just from basic self-help healthcare for yourself to listen to the kinds of advanced knowledge about what's really going on very specifically in your individual health that you can access through lab testing services. So I want to welcome you today, Mark, to today's Connect the Dots show.
Well, thank you for having me, Allison.
This is a topic, this is something that, you know, I have been basically advocating for integrative health and empowering people with health information and, kind of motivation and enthusiasm for, over 20 years. But one of the things that happens is the preponderance of popular health books, and I say this with all due respect as someone who has written a number myself and kind of been in the basic category of providing basic health information, is that, sometimes the basic health advice, while it's foundational in terms of a healthy diet and getting exercise and rest and all of that, may not be sufficient to deal with either, health imbalances that arise from today's more toxic and complex world, as well as certain kinds of health imbalances and health conditions. So a lot of people are actually really unaware of the kinds of the place for the services that you provide, Mark. So we're going to be kind of speaking to a more popular audience and kind of educating them. And I also want to note that in New York State, where I reside, these services are very tightly and overregulated. So especially New York listeners may be very unaware of them. But I think we should step up in our health literacy. So, tell me, Mark, what is the basis for using lab testing services? You know, when an integrative practitioner does that for one of their patients, what added information or benefit can come to people through really getting a more precise understanding of what's going on within their individual biochemistry?
Well, that's a great question. One of the main things that I try to do with, my concept is something that came out of the 1950s from Dr. Roger Williams. That's the whole idea of biochemical individuality. Quite often when we see studies out there, it's done on large populations, groups of people. We're not groups of people. We're individuals. And each one of us has a unique chemistry. We have a unique environment, a unique genetics. We have to find out what's going on in our chemistry right now, and also not to rely just on our feelings. We can say we feel good, but who are we comparing it to? No one, just our own experiences. And sometimes we have to get out of that subjective look and look at ourselves objectively and say, what's really going on in our chemistry? And I started this odyssey back in 1985. Mm-hmm. And it was, kind of the dawn of the use of PCs, and said, what? We're really not using the power of computing to understand what the results of these lab tests are doing. And now, 26 years later, I still see a lot of practitioners out there using the same techniques as they did in 1985. Mm-hmm. Looking at a blood test, looking at a lab test, say, oh, it's high, do this. If it's low, do that. Or doesn't matter, don't worry about it. And yet, the richness of the information in each one of the lab tests is incredible.
Mm-hmm.
I've done over 60,000 of them in the past 26 years and have been able to find incredible amounts of information about individuals that have helped them where no help was, you know, available, where practitioners, they would bounce from one doctor to another, wouldn't know what's going on. You run the one test, boom, you know, computer looks at it and says, oh, this is a pattern that we see in people with this type of a disorder, and then becomes very clear. It's hard for a person to do that individually. And so what I really want to do is I apply the world's medical knowledge in a computerized form, and the system we use right now is called BioClarity, and it's from a company called Health Director. And it's really trying to look at each person as a unique, special individual and not just as a group. So when they say people need 20 milligrams of B6 a day, well, who's people? Is it the person that's under a lot of stress? They need more, and it'll show up in these tests. If a person, you know, doesn't eat well or has a toxic environment, they need more than that. So we have to really look at what do you need and what do you need today? Because in 1 year, it could change dramatically.
That's so fascinating. I know having had, you know, this kind of testing and work done on me, I know I found out, know a few things, you know, about some of my tendencies and stuff like that. So, for example, one thing that I've seen a lot is, you know, in the self-help book world, you know, an expert who's a specialist in a given health medical specialty will, you know, write a book for a popular audience and kind of, kind of give a picture of the kinds of health symptoms that could arise among a range of people that, you know, kind of fall within their specialty. If the individual is listening to the radio program with that person or reading that book, you know, went to that doctor's office, they would be getting something very specific, individualized, you know, and very frequently with testing like yours or from other lab services in the country to get precisely into exactly what's going on with them. But, you know, the whole notion of self-help is that you kind of do it on your own and you try a few tips from a book. So frequently we'll have these wonderful conversations or I'll read books that, you know, kind of really analyze a given syndrome, and you get to the end of the day where they're kind of giving health recommendations, you know, eat this diet, try these supplements, and they're very frequently the same from book to book, because, you know, this is general foundational health wisdom and I don't dispute any of it. But one of the things that I hear a great deal, for example, is, you know, turmeric, take curcumin, you know, for to downregulate inflammation and that kind of thing. Well, I happen to know that doesn't agree with me for some reason. I don't test well for it. And, you know, I'm mentioning this because it's not so much about my individual biochemistry, but that could be going on for anyone out there. So people hear this kind of advice, and even though I think that the one-size-fits-all advice, you know, for herbs or nutrients or food supplements that the doctors and practitioners in the integrative health community offer are certainly safer, lower harm, not as powerful, and, you know, and if you need them, they help, and if you don't, it's not such a big problem as would be the case with pharmaceutical drugs, for example. But still, you know, if people have a more chronic or advanced condition, or even if they want to kind of proactively rebalance to forestall having one in the future, then they would do well to kind of know more about what really works for them and what's really needed for them. Can you give us a sense of the kinds of, you know, for example, what kinds of different, are there different kinds of tests that you do? I mean, without getting, like, for example, do you do hormonal tests? I mean, what are the general categories? Not like, you know, kind of specific, but what are some of the categories of testing or areas of bodily biochemistry that you do look at?
Well, the first one is kind of what we call, you know, the comprehensive blood chemistry, something that a lot of people get on a regular basis, but they may not get all the test results they need. I think it's really something that everybody should do every year because it can pick out problems that may be years in the making. One person who, you know, an example is a person who's a very dear friend of mine, was a clinical nutritionist, had some very wealthy and famous clientele. And in 1990, we did a blood test on her, and I said, you know what, this looks like a pattern that could develop into something, you know, of cancer, something like that, you know, really desperate and needy. And she goes, but Mark, I feel great. Well, 5 years later, she was diagnosed with stage 4 lung cancer, and she asked me to use her example, you know, in the future. And she lived another 4 years with it. You know, we were able to keep her chemistry going as much as we could. Mm-hmm. But it was something, a predisposition towards it. And it's not just cancers. It's cardiovascular disease. We know the markers. One that's very uncommonly used, unfortunately, is uric acid.
Mm-hmm.
Most doctors don't use it. The U.S. government said it's unnecessary unless you have gout. Of course, the only way to truly diagnose gout is if you have high uric acid. But it's also one of the best independent indicators of the risk of cardiovascular disease and having a cardiovascular event. So when it's high, it's really, you know, it's showing that your body needs more antioxidants or it's under a lot of oxidative stress. But conversely, also if you have a very low uric acid, people with MS, multiple sclerosis, nobody ever has had a high uric acid who's had the disease. And sometimes a misdiagnosis can be made on MS. And I've had that happen a number of times where they've had high uric acids, were diagnosed with MS, but later found to have a different disease. So that's one important test. Another one is amino acids. Mm-hmm. These are the basic building blocks of life, proteins. It was very helpful for me and, you know, for most of us in this field. A lot of us go on some personal journeys because we have to.
Mm-hmm.
I have a daughter who has had a severe and life-threatening form of epilepsy when she was 3 and a half. And they told my wife and I, listen, either your daughter won't survive past the age of 12 because it's a progressive form, or she'll be so debilitated she'll be in an institution, so just accept that. Well, that was not acceptable to me. We started doing some lab testing. We found some things out with her inhibitory amino acids, the one that would calm the brain, were very low. Started adding to her, and I could say very, you know, proudly, my daughter's turning 15 in a month, and she's going to high school. And her seizure activity, which could go up to, you know, hundreds a day, is rare anymore. And so now we've gotten that, because in the lab, the amino acid tests were very important there, as well as for people who are very active, you want to build muscle or prevent injury, rebuild yourself after stress and trauma. Brain function has a lot to do with amino acids. And then a third one that I really like is urinary organic acids. And this is telling us what's going on in your metabolism. You know, are you getting enough nutrients for your functionality, for what you're going through day to day? I've been measured for, say, magnesium levels in my red blood cells, and they've always come back normal, all within reference range, usually on the higher end. But on my functional tests, like the organic acids, I need more than the average person. It's partly genetic. My family comes from very magnesium-rich lands in Europe, didn't have enough, and also in our diets today, we don't get as much as we used to. So I have to supplement with extra magnesium above the reference range for just measuring it. So it's looking at the function. And those tests are really helpful. And there's another one I use quite often, and it's called LEAP MRT. What that looks at is the inflammatory reaction to foods, because inflammation, to me, is the leading cause of almost all diseases that are out there. And so not looking at allergic reactions to foods and food additives, but which ones cause inflammation. Because if you're able to stop taking all these foods that cause inflammation, your body has a better chance of healing itself, recovering from any disorders, or actually preventing any of these disorders like cardiovascular disease, type 2 diabetes. And so those four, I think, are the main categories that I look at. Of course, there are many others, but I also have this motto of using the least number of tests necessary to get the biggest response, because everybody has a limit as to how much money they can really spend. And so we want to use our money cautiously and wisely.
So let me ask you a question. How does that work? Do people test directly themselves with you? Do they have to go via a practitioner? How does that work?
Well, they'd have to go through a practitioner. There are some services out there that allow them to get their lab tests done. Direct Lab Services is one of them. There's a few others out there. But we work directly with practitioners all over the world. And, you know, that's, it's because there's nothing that's more valuable than having a practitioner there who can actually see the person and understand what the person's going through. Because while all these numbers are really great, you have to put it in context of what the person is like. And that's why a good practitioner is always very valuable to have there, and, you know, using this tool along with it.
Mm-hmm. And how well are the practitioners trained to interpret the information, in your experience?
Well, if they take my classes, they're very good at it. I just worked with a group out of Rhode Island, which is one of those states like New York that has problems with, you know, doing the lab testing. But they came from all over the world. They came from Australia, the UK, Dominican Republic, Canada, U.S. Mm. And I go through an extensive 2.5-day class, which they go through and they, you know, learn how to interpret it. But the reports themselves are almost self-instructing. There's so much information in them, and it's laid out in such a logical manner. It's 26 years worth of work that we've done on it. Mm-hmm. But it makes it very easy for a person to just pick it up for the first time and begin to understand, you know, what it means. But we have quite a number of practitioners all over the country who've, you know, done quite a bit of work with me over the years and that are available.
So this has kind of been a process. Do other countries, you mentioned you have, you know, quite a few people coming from abroad to train with you. Do they then order the services through your company from abroad? Are these offered abroad? Are the people internationally a little more into this? Or how does that go?
Well, it depends country to country. It's something that we're reintroducing. We kind of like went back to just doing the U.S. and Canada for a while. Mm-hmm. But now we're starting to see that there's so much more demand from outside the U.S. and North America, you know, countries like the U.K. and, the, you know, many in the European Union, Germany, you know, Scandinavia certainly is very interested in it. But one of the problems that they have is it's all their type of medicine is socialized, so much of it is paid for. So when they have to do something out of pocket, you know, they don't know quite how to handle it. But it's amazing those people who do are the ones who are the most proactive and really want to, you know, become healthy instead of just having to deal with disease. Because really the model out there is, well, you know, all our health services now shouldn't be called health services. It should be called sick services. Because they're dealing with the aftermath after you've become sick. And what we really try to do is, well, you know, my mentor used to always tell me, he said, Mark, it's a heck of a lot easier to change your oil every 3,000 to 5,000 miles than to do one major engine overhaul every 50,000. Quite often you'll do that engine overhaul and the car will never be the same.
Right.
If you do the 3,000 to 5,000 mile oil change, your car can last 200,000, 300,000 miles. And so that's what we really try to focus on, is not so much having to wait until somebody's sick, although this does benefit quite a bit. It's really a lot easier to catch it way before it becomes a problem.
And would you say that people are good at doing that? Do they see the value of it? Have you seen an improvement in that area? Or, you know, is it basically, I mean, people come to you through practitioners. So it seems like part of the job is the practitioner educating the people, you know, as well. I mean, isn't, it sounds like that would be part of it, too. Is that correct?
Absolutely. And what I like to, the analogy I like to do is that each of you drive your own health car or health bus. The doctor's there to be your co-pilot, to help you out. What too many people do is they want the doctor to drive the bus for them, drive their health care, where they really need to take the responsibility. And one thing the doctors have noticed who work with us is that there's a higher level of patient compliance when they can actually see a reason why they're doing something. So when, say, it's, and this is typical, the wife goes in first. She wants to take care of her health. And then the doctor may give her a number of supplements to take, goes home, and then you have something called the skeptical spouse syndrome. Spouse goes, why in the world are you taking all of this? And typically she goes, well, geez, I don't remember. You know, I know my doctor told me to. But if you have this report, it goes down and says, this is why I do it. This is why I take it. And what a lot of people are, practitioners are noticing, the husbands come in within a few weeks, go, I'd like to try that out. Because now the wife's got a lot more energy than I do. She's, you know, more focused, feeling better. And I'm starting to fall behind, so I want to catch up. And then the whole family begins to get in on it, and then it's a whole lifestyle change.
Mm-hmm. What typically do people change? I mean, they change their diet, they take more supplements. Those are the kinds of things that are generally recommended, or?
Yeah, they do some dietary changes. They begin to understand why they need to do it. You know, I'm a case in point. Went through a very stressful period. I did my lab test and noticed my triglycerides shot up. And I said, okay, that's not good. I now need to make a substantial change in my lifestyle, my behavior patterns. And I dropped my triglycerides in 1 month by 150 points.
How did you do that?
Use of a lot of fish oils.
Mm-hmm.
There's been some studies out recently that said, oh, you know, these nutrients don't seem to reduce the risk of coronary heart disease, but it's all in the dosage. So basically they went out and said, well, you know, fish oils, they used 600 milligrams. Well, that's really inadequate. You need to take at least 2 to 4 grams. And, you know, they designed these studies almost to fail. It's like if I were to say, well, I have a study here of whether water puts out fires. And I have a bucket of water, and I have a house on fire. I pour the water on the house. The fire doesn't go out. So my conclusion is water doesn't put out fires. And that's what I see in research all the time, going, well, B6 doesn't help with coronary heart disease. Well, not if you use 3 milligrams. You need to use a minimum of 50, if not 100. And so, you know, what we try to do with these lab tests is say, what is the clinical relevant dose that has been shown by science to make a change? Mm-hmm. So with me, it was really getting, reducing stress and not letting it get to me, and also getting more fish oils in. I used higher levels of coenzyme Q10, cleaned up my diet. And within, you know, a few months, I was right back down to normal levels and reduced my risk of a heart attack from, you know, probably about 80%.
Well, that's impressive. We're going to have to take a break here, Mark. And when we come back, I'd like to find out a little bit more about, you know, like what we were talking about, the studies, and also that using this service actually, as you said, helps make objective, gives objective measures to our efforts to upgrade our health. So we'll be talking about that in the next segment. And please stay with us, listeners, on Connect the Dots.
There was light, there was the sky, and there in the trees that crawled alive.
You are listening to PRN, Progressive Radio Network.
I'm Gary Knoll. I've been on radio for 37 years, every day, and I'm pleased that the Progressive Radio Network exists, because this is the one form that brings together some of the most important, probing, creative, and dynamic minds on the planet. Join us each and every day, 24/7, on the Progressive Radio Network, your home for independent thinking.
Let your imagination fly. I'm Francesca Rhiannon. Take a trip with me through the literary landscape of Writer's Voice. Join the tour and the conversation as we talk with writers of all genres about matters that move us and make us think. Right here on the Progressive Radio Network, every Saturday at noon.
Mike Fader here. Every Thursday following Gary Knoll from 1 to 2 p.m. Eastern Time, I will expound and expand on stories, both personal and public, attempting to make the sometimes ephemeral but always essential connections between our internal landscapes and our external lives. So please join me, Mike Fader, Thursdays from 1 to 2 p.m. Eastern Time for The Turning Point, here on the Progressive Radio Network.
This is PRN, the Progressive Radio Network.
Umma
Welcome back, listeners, to Connect the Dots. I'm Allison Rose Levy, and on this program we talk about the connection between your personal health, health care, our health environment, food, and society's health as well. On today's show, we're speaking with Mark Schaus of Lab Interpretation. His company offers lab testing services to integrative health practitioners. I just want to kind of, as a side note, say that this week, as you're listening to this show, I'm going to be reporting at the Integrative Health Symposium in New York City, which is a wonderful, I think it's one of the major East Coast Integrative Health Conferences. I've attended every single one, I think missed maybe one only, in the last dozen years or so, and all of the major leaders in healthcare are presenting there, and it's going to be very exciting. So we're doing this broadcast pre-recorded, and that's why this week we don't have a featured health activist action as we often do. But I want to urge listeners to check back, sign up for the e-zine, the health outlook that I offer through my website, healthjournalistblog.com. And that way you can keep abreast of any current actions, follow my blogs, as well as learn about all of our radio programs, current and upcoming. And some of them are really going to be quite terrific. And in fact, I have an upcoming blog. I'm doing two blogs on an event that I attended last weekend in Carlsbad, California, called Sages and Scientists. And this is something hosted by Deepak Chopra for the Chopra Foundation. And it was one of the most fascinating gatherings of leading physicists and spiritual practitioners and neuropsychiatrists and all kinds of people looking at the area of health and consciousness and you know, sort of big questions like, you know, what is the universe made of and how are we all connected to it? And it was actually one of the most fascinating conferences I've ever attended, and I'm doing two blogs on it this week. One on the spiritual aspects and one on the connection to environment and sustainability. So please do sign up at healthjournalistblog.com so that you can read those blogs in the e-zine. And now back to our conversation with Mark Schaus of Lab Interpretation, LLC. And I think this is a really terrific orientation to a kind of more detailed and specific understanding of what's going on individually within each of us, as reflected by lab testing services. You know, Mark, in our last segment, one of the things that you were saying is that to really, you know, it's one thing to hear, take more fish oils, you know, omega-3 fatty acids are good for you. But you're really pointing out that to fine-tune the amount that's really right or called for, indicated for you, these services can be, you know, specifically, it's not just take them, well, how much should I take? What would be right for me? What meets my particular health need? And you're saying that your services really can help customize that, which can make all the difference, as you described in the last segment, in terms of your own, you know, bringing down your triglyceride levels and forestalling risks of heart disease and other things. One of the things you mentioned is that the way studies are done is actually quite inadequate, or, you know, kind of is a mixed bag, because you can, you know, one of the things that I've come to understand reporting on health for 25 years is that, you know, you can almost find anything you want in a study. We know that, for example, you know, most of the whole idea that, you know, we study something is really based on the need to prove, you know, that the toxic drugs, which can have very adverse downside, you know, effects, are in fact safe for use, do anything near to what there is hoped, and that the level of reactions is not so harmful as to cancel out the benefit. Nevertheless, the science model that we use for this is so costly and so specific that we're now at a time when the only people that can afford to prove anything in a study are pharmaceutical companies, and indeed they do pay for these studies, and when they pay for them, they will frequently either shelve a study that doesn't demonstrate what they hoped, so that you never hear of it, or, you know, they can kind of tilt them one way or tilt them the other way. So, you know, on the one hand, I think people have invested a lot of belief in, you know, kind of biochemical markers and scientific research, but on the other, it's happening within a business context where a lot of that can be manipulated. And as you pointed out, you know, if they take a natural supplement and they study too low a quantity of it in a test, then guess what? They find out it doesn't work, and then they invalidate it. So, you know, but on the other hand, you're actually documenting what's happening in people's biochemistry, so that if they do this test with you and then they adjust their supplement use, they can come back and test later and find, you know, a change. So what's your perspective on the, you know, kind of the current state of scientific research in terms of its adequacy?
You know, I used to work in helping pharmaceuticals and medical device companies and doing clinical trials and using software to develop them. And I was absolutely appalled at what I saw. But conversely, I've also been appalled by some of the supplement companies and some of their tilted research. Like you mentioned that, you know, many of the drugs, it doesn't look good, they shelve it. Well, it's in the case with antidepressants. If you add all the studies that were conducted and you add all the negative ones and positive ones on SSRI antidepressants, we find out that the majority of them, more than 50% of the time, the SSRIs don't work. They did the study on St. John's Wort saying, well, it didn't do as well as placebo. But guess what? It did better than the drug.
And no, yet, kidding.
Yeah, it was, you know, Prozac, and it didn't work as well. So, you know, there's so much out there. And then when they do the study, there was a big one on selenium. So, well, selenium, you know, we think would help with type 2 diabetes. Did this large study over 9 years and said it didn't work. Well, if we really read the study, what happened was they were giving additional selenium to people who were already showing signs of selenium toxicity. Had they run proper lab tests, they would have stopped the supplementation, and they would have, you know, said no more, and they would have noticed there was a dramatic improvement in type 2 diabetes with people taking selenium. But just don't take too much. You know, it's all in the dosage, and when we look at things like for cognitive function, there's a beautiful nutrient called glycerophospholipid. All the studies on humans are 1,200 milligrams for an adult. A lot of companies and supplement companies are going, oh, just take 300. Nope, doesn't work. It doesn't show much benefit at 300 milligrams. It's at 1,200. So it's real important. You know, this goes on with supplement companies. I see them take studies out of context. You know, when we looked at this latest vitamin D stuff, came from the Institute of Medicine. Oh, my gosh, you know, there's toxicity reports over 1,000 IUs of vitamin D. No, there isn't. There is one with a person taking 160,000 units a day. That's excessive. I can almost not call it science sometimes. You know, statin drugs, they can benefit people. They can lower the risk for a coronary heart attack. But the risk factors and giving it to the wrong people, I mean, for one person to prevent one heart attack amongst 100 men, it takes 5 years to prevent one heart attack of taking statin drugs. Yet the amount of side effects are staggering. So trying to find out the person who would benefit from it is the way they should be doing it. Instead, they go, oh, you have a symptom, let's throw it at you. Instead of saying, what does that person's chemistry require them to take? And, you know, there are some very integrative doctors who are also using statin drugs, using them in the correct manner, and have phenomenal responses. There is a use for the pharmaceutical drug. They can't say, my daughter needs it. If she didn't have it, we wouldn't have her alive. But it's the right use of them, the proper dosage for that person, that's critical. And you can't do that by guessing. You can only do that through the proper use of lab testing.
Wow. So really, there's a lot greater kind of specificity that people could do. But is this kind of testing service, is it covered by most insurance, any insurance? Isn't that one of the problems? You know, is in effect, we're covering, the health insurance isn't covering the fine-tuning services like those that your lab offers that would really make a difference. Instead, we're, you know, kind of paying after the fact when things, you know, have already kind of gone out of whack. I'd love to hear, you know, your kind of thoughts on that one.
Oh, well, you know, I've been lucky. I've been in the insurance industry for a while. My dad was the head of claims and underwriting for a health insurance company in New York.
Mm-hmm.
And what we found out is they don't care about lowering the costs and making you stay healthier. They, because here's the key. They say if you had one procedure that cost $100 and another one that cost $10,000, they would actually prefer to do the $10,000 one because they make a certain type of profit. They make about, say, we'll throw out a number, 10%. So they make 10% out of $100, that's $10. 10% out of $1,000 would be $100, much more profit there. What they're looking at is like, well, we're just going to charge everyone for that $1,000 procedure. We're going to spread it out over the group. We don't need to make less money. We need to make more profits. So they're actually perpetrating this health care, sick care system. They're not trying to prevent you from getting a disease. Well, if we really want to do health care reform, we need to stop treating after the fact and treat and help people before. And there are movements out there to do this, and that's what we need to do, and that's what integrative health is supposedly there for. Try to prevent these disorders, get you in your chemistry, you know, and a big one is toxicity issues.
I mean, yes, I noticed your book is about that, and that's something that's a constant theme on this show. So definitely, let's go there and discuss that because I wanted to find out more about your book. And you know, please, I'd love to hear that from your perspective. Do you offer tests where you can really get a handle on whether people are toxic? Because, you know, it seems that on the one hand, there's this thing of, oh, let's detoxify. I'll drink a green drink and go on a water fast. And, you know, now I'm no longer toxic, you know. And then on the other hand, we have, like, all of these chemicals that are coming to us through food pesticides, through products, through, you know, heavy metals in fish and from industrial uses. All kinds of different things that we really don't know specifically are there, but then we have this kind of easy, I'll just detoxify thing. And so people neither, you know, detox gets a bad name because it's kind of thought, well, if I just, you know, drink a few weeks worth of green drinks, I know I've handled it and I've done and I feel so good, you know. And on the other hand, we don't know specifically what was in there. We don't know specifically if it came out. and we don't know, you know, how to assess that. I mean, do you assess those kinds of things? You know, are you actually able to find that, you know, whether people, you know, are toxic and, you know, what markers are there that actually show this?
Yeah, this is my passion. I've been involved in environmental issues, and I set up one of the first recycle places in New York City back in the 60s as a kid.
Wow.
I've always been there, but then my daughter, I really believe that what caused, or actually helped to cause her seizure disorder was the effects of pesticides on my wife while she was pregnant with my daughter.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, I started seeing this, and then I started seeing certain tests that are available for us to look at it, and it's getting better every year. We're getting more adept at being able to measure these things. Like one in particular that I'm really concerned about is phthalates, which we find in soft plastics, also find in a lot of cosmetics, personal care products.
Mm-hmm.
We know the effects. You know, scientists are very cautious people. They tend to say we don't absolutely know, but we're pretty sure.
Mm-hmm.
And that leaves people to go, wow, you're not really sure about it? You're not completely sure? Well, they're pretty sure that phthalates can depress testosterone. They can cause insulin resistance. They damage the DNA in male sperm. They cause shortening of pregnancies in women. And they've seen this in study after study after study. Yet this chemical is ubiquitous. It's everywhere. And what I'm starting to see is I'm getting calls from universities, from hospitals around the world going, Mark, we're starting to see really low levels of testosterone in young men.
Wow.
The age of 18 to 30 that look like 60 and 70-year-olds.
Mm-hmm.
What's going on? So we started testing for phthalates, and lo and behold, all of these young men are very high in them. With detox, the first lesson I always teach is not to detox yourself, to avoid exposure. you got to get away from it. We had one case of a couple that had levels of phthalates, and the reference range was 0 to 1. To put this into perspective, the male was 171, and the female was 164. We're talking 17,000% above normal.
Hmm.
And what we found out is they had those little air freshener plug-ins, two of them in every room of their home.
Oh, my.
And it is loaded with phthalates, and you have to understand what these, and that one is the more toxic version. Phthalates were actually first developed in the U.S. military in the use of chemical warfare.
Hmm.
And you can actually buy the particular chemical itself. It's called new car smell.
Mm-hmm.
They were testing it in Vietnam and said it was just unreliable, couldn't deal with it. You can buy it in the supermarket. I mean, this is stuff that we're going to spray on the jungles. And they knew some of the effects. It's a steroidal-like compound that can damage, you know, the hormone systems of humans. Really well documented. We've known this since the 60s. And so instead of banning it, we turn it into a consumer product. And there's just other ones. Styrene, which is found in styrofoam. Every mm-hmm. man, woman, and child in the U.S. in the past 40 years is tested for that in their bloodstream. Because nobody doesn't have it. What I want to do is make sure people avoid when they can, and there are great resources out there to find out where your sources are, like the Environmental Working Group website at EWG.org. They have a whole database of 40,000 products and what's in them. The second is you have to find out particularly what chemical you have, and then you can start detoxing the precise way to do it safely, because if you detox benzene incorrectly, you can make it actually more carcinogenic. So you have to be aware of what you're fighting and what you're dealing with, avoid it, and then use the proper detox pathways. And that's what the tests start doing. They start finding out, are you very good at phase one? Are you good at phase two? Maybe too good at phase one? So we want to balance it so your body does it normally and, very importantly, safely.
Mm. So in other words, there's actually, you're saying that, A, you can detect specifically what chemicals people have, and, B, that you can actually customize the way they detox. So it's not just, you know, same size green drink for all kind of thing. The reason that I'm really interested in this, I have to say, is the following. You know, one of I do, you know, this is our first conversation, and we're Facebook friends, but I don't know if you followed my work that much. But, you know, I do a lot of reporting on, you know, legislation and activism that will help protect us overall from things like unhealthy food processes, toxic chemicals. In other words, you know, there's a lot we can do as individuals, but there are a lot of things that are hard to avoid because they're so ubiquitous, and we really have to address them as a society and not just, you know, kind of struggle to avoid them as individuals and then each one of us trot off to be detoxed. I don't minimize the importance of doing that, but I also think it's very important. If this is harming everyone, why is it out there being offered with children absorbing it and everything else? So I do a lot of reporting on that. But one of the things I've noticed is that, you know, very often there'll be people, practitioners and others, recommending detox, but they never lift their voice to deal with any, you know, of these broader issues, and they don't turn people, as you just did, to the Environmental Working Group, who, you know, I cover my journalism covers in their range most regularly, and there's kind of almost a disconnect between, you know, personal health advice on the one hand and really dealing with some of the sources of the health problems on the other. And I'm very, you know, gratified to hear you doing both. Why do you think so few people do that?
Oh, I have pretty strong feelings about this. I'm involved in a study on toxicity, effects of a toxic chemical release in a Superfund site on the West Coast.
Mm-hmm.
We know, tracked a number of people that pretty much everybody in this woman's, friend of mine, she was funding this study, everybody in her class, one member of the family who lived in this town, developed cancer. And she's in her 50s.
Mm. Mm.
Everyone. We got threatening letters saying that if we dared to release any of this information, you know, it would be, you know, they'd threaten us, you know, physically, lawsuits, the whole bit. And I'm looking at this and going, well, why did this one person do it? Isn't this the person whose wife died of cancer caused by this toxic waste dump? Their concern is they lose their job. You know, it's like, well, oh, we got to allow, you know, like you cover with fracking,
mm-hmm.
we're going to allow this because we need it financially. Mm-hmm. But do you understand the cost to human health and life that we now are, there's estimates that we will not have a normal, healthy child born after the year 2012. That frightens me. I have an 8-year-old and a soon-to-be 15-year-old. Mm-hmm. What are their kind of kids going to be like when we have just this? I just can't fathom it unless it's all about money and it's just people saying, got to protect my job, I got to make more. Yeah, but you're going to die early. You're going to be more morbid. You know, one of my things is I think this explosion of obesity in the world is due to environmental toxins. I cover that in my book. And I've actually traveled around the world and lectured in places like Bogota, Colombia, where I've had professors telling me that they see people getting obese on 1,500 calories a day and less.
Oh.
And it's, if you go to Bogota, you see it's just, you know, I thought it was a fog had settled in. It wasn't. It was just a haze of pollutants.
Oh, my goodness gracious.
We are thinking this is all about making a profit and not understanding that there is, you know, my doctorate's in business. So I look at things and I go, what's the human cost? You have to put that in. They refuse to put that cost in. The human cost of suffering, the healthcare system. I mean, the President's Council on Cancer came out last year. Mm-hmm. It's the reason we have this increase in cancer is strictly with the environment,
mm-hmm.
period. This was not, you know, a Democrat versus Republican thing. Half the members were appointed by Bush, half by Obama.
Mm-hmm.
It was bipartisan. They said, yes, it is definitely the environment. The data is clear. And yet so many people fight it. Well, we might lose profits. We might lose a few jobs. You're going to lose lives. You know, I mean, you knew Robert Crahan?
Yes.
You know, he passed away at the age of 49 of colorectal cancer.
Mm.
World-renowned nutritionist. He didn't run any of his lab tests. He didn't look at those things. You know, he tried to live a very healthy life. I mean, I've traveled with Robert. We were close friends. We just don't know. We have to test to make sure that we're not, you know, exposed to these things. Who knows that he might have had something really close by that was, you know, causing him to become toxic. He didn't look at
well,
it
that's,
it was
I
too
think
late.
That brings up an excellent point. And Mark, and it's really sad that we lost, you know, Robert Crahan this year. And of course, I knew him too. He, you know, he spent part of the year in New York, and you know, he was really, for listeners who don't know of him, he was just really one of our leading nutritional educators. I think you would have to say
mm-hmm.
he not only was a brilliant nutritionist, but he was a brilliant educator about nutrition in a very sophisticated way. So, you know. It's like, you know, my feeling about that is, yes, he may have had toxic exposures. Where are people going to hide where they're not going to have them? So if someone like that, who really is taking impeccable care and has all of the knowledge in the world, you know the right things to do or eat or whatever, you know, it's like the illusion is that we can just kind of do it all ourselves. I think there's more that we can and should be doing to customize our care. But I think we also need to, you know, join the environmental working group, join these other activist groups. You know, I offer actions on a range of different topics on my website and eZine, and as also people who Facebook friend me even get a huge torrent more of things that I am suggesting people act on and stuff like that, because you can't disconnect the two. You know, if you take an airplane trip and you go here and you go there, something comes to your city, you know, as the threat of chemical water is coming to New York, to our food and our water, you know, if you don't know about it or if it's happening or you go somewhere, we can't go with a Geiger counter that, you know, as we can for maybe electromagnetics that will tell us, you know, this is here or that's there. And even if you know, where are you going to go? I mean, we had an environmental leading epidemiologist on the show a couple of weeks back, and someone called in and said, where can I move to hide? you know, I certainly understand the feeling, but I don't think that's how we're going to address it. You know, so, I mean, what do you, do you find that people who, that as they really see what's going on in their biochemistry, they become, you know, kind of more proactive on a societal level as well? Is it kind of a wake-up call for people? What have you noticed in that regard?
When they get educated, they feel like they can do it. I had a great example of a personal trainer had come to one of my lectures, and I had gone over environmental issues, and I said, one of the sources of these things called phthalates are pharmaceutical drugs. Mm. He was on a panel, and he made that comment, and there was a professor from a medical school who said, you're an idiot. You know what you're talking about. It's not in there. So this trainer gets on his little computer, his laptop, and spins it around and shows it, shows the study that was published in a revered journal that says one of the sources of phthalates is pharmaceutical prescription drugs. And the audience all of a sudden went, okay, he's got credibility. Now we're going to pay attention to him and not this other guy. When you get people educated, they begin to speak out more. When we educated people that hydrogenated fats were bad, we didn't need a million-man march. We didn't need protests. We said, we're not going to buy that stuff anymore. So what happened? Companies across the board started removing it. So we started seeing a much greater lowering of hydrogenated fats in our diets. We have to be educated so we can tell them with a clear voice and not a paranoid one, where we sound like, you know, Chicken Little claiming that, you know, the sky's falling. No one will listen to you after a while. You have to come out with credible evidence and show them that the data does exist, that it's clear, it affects humans, it affects animals and our children, and then people will listen and say, I'm just not going to buy that anymore. I'm going to say, if you take that product and you sell it, we will not buy anything from you. It is happening. You know, a few years ago, I was pretty depressed. I've always been an activist. I didn't think, you know, people were listening, but then gradually I'm seeing more and more.
I think a lot of people are listening nowadays, you know, and I just, it's funny that you mentioned the hydrogenated fats, Mark, because I have to share this with you. I did a book with Mary Enig, who is a PhD in nutrition. Do you know Mary Enig, who that is?
Yeah.
She basically was the original fats researcher who identified that trans fats, hydrogenated fats, which you're mentioning, were unhealthy. And she had 20 years of basically being shunned in her profession, you know, for the research that she did that was early on showing this. And then, you know, as time passed, the truth was revealed, and she was vindicated, awarded by, you know, the Clinical Nutrition Society and all of the rest of it, you know. But it took that long. So the reason I mention this is it's a cautionary tale so that, you know, one of the things I think that's so confusing for people out there when they see all these different conflicting health opinions and everything is to understand that, you know, if you're advancing, you know, a health understanding, even if it's very well grounded and based in science, as you say, Mark, you know, very often if there's, you know, some industry that has to retool, you know, to be more healthful in the face of this, there'll be a lot of pushback and resistance initially. So, you know, if you hear things debunked or people saying, oh, this ingredient couldn't possibly cause a problem and, you know, we've studied it and we know, you know, just a little skepticism is in order on all sides and a healthy thing, as kind of as gently as I'll put it there. Because, you know, there will be pushback. And, you know, that's something that's to be expected. So it's, you know, a little skepticism is healthy rather than saying, oh, well, that couldn't be healthy. They proved it isn't. Or that couldn't be unhealthy. They proved it isn't. You know, it's like I think we want to look at the numbers. And that's the virtue of the testing that you do, but we don't want to, you know, just hang our hat in one place uncritically.
Absolutely. And we do need to treat people individually. You know, we do need to look at all the facts. You know, they're quite often that, you know, we've made comments of something's bad, you know, the good old cyclamates back in the 60s and 70s. You know, oh, how terrible it was. When we started looking at the research, really, it didn't really say it was as bad as some of the new things like aspartame that has come since, you know, and just we've we have to look at it economically as well. I mean, you know, there's things like bisphenol A, which is another one that really should be banned and has no business in human bodies. The industry is pushing back heavily against all the negative research on it. And the reason is, this is a staggering number. The amount of money generated because of bisphenol A per hour in the world is $100 million per hour.
Wow.
That's a staggering number. And actually, there's one researcher who's done a lot against BPA and is saying, I'm surprised I haven't been assassinated because of my comments about it and all the research that we've been doing, because that's a lot of money.
Mm-hmm.
And it's destroying humans. I mean, we're causing – it's just so estrogenic. Why do we in the United States have such a high level of breast cancer amongst women? You know, I've done a lecture once in this predominantly female audience. I said, you know, I'm a little upset that just seeing the pink ribbons about trying to cure breast cancer.
Mm-hmm.
Could we spend some of that money in preventing it? Because we know a lot of these causes. If we spend 10% of that money trying to find a cure to prevent it, we would save far more lives. I don't want women to go through the treatments. I don't want them to go through the cures because they're rough. They're not pleasant, and I don't think anyone should.
Mm-hmm.
We need to stop it from happening, and there are chemicals there that are, we know, cause breast cancer, and yet we allow them.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, I just want to, I think this is excellent, and we're going to have you back on again. I just want to, because we're about ready to end the show here. There's a lot really of terrific information. I want to point people to your book, available on Amazon and also through this publisher, Achieving Victory Over a Toxic World. And you can also go to toxicworldbook.com to read Mark's blog, find out about his book, and learn more about all he knows on these important topics. Thank you for being with us today, Mark. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you for having me.